Welcome to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman with Jeff Fawcett, PhD. We come to you weekly with a critical, independent voice on the politics and practice of health. No question about it, some people are more sensitive than others, more prone to overstimulation, overwhelm, and anxiety. Whether you start out sympathetic dominant or develop a hair trigger nervous system over time, there are reasons why. Certainly you inherit characteristics from family members, but your environment, psychologically, sociologically, and physically, from your mother's womb until today, affects how sensitive you are. You might guess that suppressing symptoms with psychiatric medications isn't usually effective, since sensitive people are highly reactive to medications and chemicals of all kinds. Anyway, as I said, there are reasons for the sensitivity. There are certainly ample reasons currently, with the state of our world, to feel anxious. Still, many suffer more than others. Today I want to explore anxiety, its triggers, and treatments. First, an editorial about this week's health news by Jeff Fawcett, PhD.
Thank you, Lena. An activist resisting the imposition of smart meters asked for my help a few days ago. She had been invited by Pacific Gas and Electric, PG&E, to participate in what it called a customer advisory forum. She attended one and is being invited back for another. At the first meeting, she was given a binder that included two so-called fact sheets published by the World Health Organization. One fact sheet concerns electromagnetic hypersensitivity. The other concerns the health risks from wireless networks. Both issues are central to the struggle to prevent PG&E and other utilities from installing wireless smart meters at will and creating the mesh networks that will tie them all together. The story that PG&E is telling with the support of the World Health Organization is that there's nothing to worry about. The World Health Organization's position on electromagnetic hypersensitivity is that it, quote, has no clear diagnostic criteria and there is no scientific basis to link its symptoms to EMF exposure, end quote. Its position on the health risks of wireless networks is that, quote, considering the very low exposure levels and research results collected to date, there is no convincing scientific evidence that the weak radio frequency signals from wireless networks cause adverse health effects, end quote. So I was asked for help in how to respond to these documents. After all, it's the World Health Organization. What I told her is that both statements are false, not because I disagree with them, but because the statements take the position that contrary evidence doesn't even exist. It's disgraceful. They should be ashamed. With regard to electromagnetic hypersensitivity, there exists a large and growing body of scientific evidence, not to mention personal experiences reported by individuals, that EMF exposure causes symptoms and illness. Moreover, with regard to an absence of diagnostic criteria for the condition, the Swedish government and medical community have established them. For many years, electromagnetic hypersensitivity has been recognized as a functional impairment. And with regard to health risks of weak signals from wireless networks, again, there exists a substantial body of scientific evidence and, again, reports by individuals that exposures to these signals damage health. For example, in causing breaks in the protective blood-brain barrier, breaks that allow toxins to reach brain tissue. Both statements by the World Health Organization are part of a story that everything is okay. This story intentionally leaves out the many good reasons to believe that everything isn't okay. Other national and international organizations, including the FDA, are telling the same story as the World Health Organization. Why would they ignore evidence and say something that isn't true? The charitable explanation is that these people, and they are actual flesh and blood human beings, not an abstraction called the World Health Organization, these people think they're doing what's best. They're experts, after all. They're trained to make sound judgments in science and public policy. They know better than you that this is shamelessly self-conscious is described most recently in Don Meach's PhD dissertation, which analyzes the standard-setting process for exposure to radio frequency radiation that has gone on since the 1950s. The uncharitable explanation is that the EIF people at the World Health Organization are in a revolving door with the telecommunications and other industries for which wireless technologies are essential. So it's basically about career advancement and job security. The website Microwave News has quite a bit to say about this issue. None of this is new. And, of course, none of it is peculiar to the regulation of wireless technologies. Beginning in the 19th century, a movement led by some of the most progressive thinking activists of their day successfully created a culture of expertise. As the technologies of Western societies advanced and their politics became increasingly corrupt, the activists believed that only neutral experts trained in the scientific method and qualified to impartially evaluate evidence could be entrusted with the public interest. The alternative seemed to be further descent into the mire of laissez-faire capitalism controlled by robber barons. Other equally horrifying alternatives lurked in the shadows, such as socialism, communism, and syndicalism. The culture of experts would bring progress, hence the progressive movement. And progress is good, isn't it? So anything that thwarts progress is bad, isn't it? Nod your head in agreement, of course it is. It is this storyline, the narrative of progress, that the EMF people at the World Health Organization are telling themselves and you. This is also the story that the smart meter people at PG&E are telling themselves and you. It's progress. It's good. Don't worry. We're experts. Me? When I hear that story, I worry. When I hear someone who is supposed to be speaking from a scientific perspective say something such as, no scientific basis to link this with that, or there's no conclusive evidence of harm, or there's no convincing research, I think, no scientific basis? What stack of research is being ignored? Not convincing or conclusive? For whom? Based on what? What's the storyline here? So I don't just worry about them. I don't believe them. I don't trust them. I don't like them. And I don't like their story. I want us to start telling a better story. A transcript of this editorial is available on the blog at yourownhealthandfitness.org. I'm Jeffrey Fawcett. Take care of yourself.
Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett is an environmental economist, a political economist. He's a writer and a health educator. He produces the show with me and is primary author of our book, Too Much Medicine, Not Enough Health. Now to our topic for today, which is anxiety. And indeed, what I'm going to be examining with you and discussing with you starts with you doing some critical thinking. Jeff's editorials are intended to give you examples of critical thinking. So that's really what this show is about, is learning how to do some critical thinking on your own behalf when you're tackling a topic. So what you may find is that as I unpack the issues that surround anxiety symptoms, it may indeed repeat many things that I've said about other areas of concerns, other symptoms, because there's an overlapping to all of these syndromes and feelings and symptoms. There's an overlap, certainly, in the exposures that we all have. So the first problem that you've got on your hands is to have a sense of where the anxiety may be coming from, because I want you very much to understand that if you are feeling anxiety, there's really some reason why that's happening. And it isn't going to be just physiologic. So, as I said, there's plenty to be anxious about in our world right now. If you are in a low socioeconomic strata, then, which actually many of us are plunging into these days, even if we were in a better, there's going to be anxiety there, because it's basically you're in a situation where you don't know how you're going to survive, and more people are having that experience. But if you come from a group that grew up with this and have generations of this, you can count on anxiety being there unless you have successfully shut down your feelings, which some people have to do to survive. If you're feeling the anxiety, it may be that something new is triggering it. If it's a new problem for you, it's time to do a little detective work. So clearly, as I said, how you were raised what kind of traumatic or stressful situations you were exposed to as an infant and even before that in your mother's womb are going to have profound effects on your sensitivity and, you know, how much your nervous system is stuck in a fight or flight. So let's do some detective work. You're feeling anxiety. Is it new? How recent did you start feeling anxiety? Is it within the last 1 to 2 years or even shorter? Is it a shorter period of time? And if that's true, what's changed? Are you taking a medication or are you withdrawing from a medication? Have you moved to a new home? Do you have a different office? Are you taking different nutrients or supplements or treatments? Have you changed jobs? Are you in recovery? You know, same thing as withdrawal. Are your hormones possibly out of balance? Many of you will find as you listen to the show that likely that is so if you're experiencing a lot of anxiety because there's a hormonal impact from the stress. Are your blood sugars deranged? Are you having blood sugar reactions? Are you experiencing what we call, some people call hypoglycemia? Have you just recovered from a prolonged illness or did you have a medical procedure that could very much be throwing you into an anxious state? Did you just start using a new personal product or a new technology? Statistics really vary, but judging from my practice, anxiety is on the rise. Obsessive, looping thoughts, panic, heart palpitations, high blood pressure, insomnia, headaches and pressure in the head and in the eyes, sensitive red skin and eyes, gastrointestinal symptoms, brain fog, and cognitive decline, she said, stuttering. The first place to look at is your medicine chest. Look up your medications. If you're taking as many medications as my client population, then look up the side effects, and you will probably find anxiety in there. And then what happens in combination, even if they're not individually listing anxiety? What happens when you take them in combination? So, and again, are you taking a new supplement? People react differently to herbs and supplements. Something that may seem extremely benign still could have an odd effect on an individual. So if you're taking a new supplement or something's new, the first thing to do is to remove the thing that's new and see if your symptoms subside, and it may happen quickly. Next, no matter whether you believe it or not, are you using more wireless? Or are you in a new environment that has more of it? Now, I know that there is a portion of our listening audience that is now rolling their eyes, maybe even reaching for the dial to turn the show off. But a very, very substantial portion of the people who listen to the show because we discuss this and no one else does. The truth is that what I am now seeing with people calling me is that as we increase and proliferate wireless technologies, people are having more symptoms, and that includes the new smart meter program. I'm getting an enormous number of emails and calls from people who are desperate to know what to do. I've even been told recently that PG&E is telling people that they haven't even hooked up the system and that they shouldn't have a problem. The truth is people are having symptoms from this, and people who never had symptoms before are having symptoms now. So remember the symptoms I gave you. You're going to have, people will start to have rapid heartbeats, anxiety reactions, panic attacks, insomnia, gummy, swollen eyes, red skin. The lists go on and on. If you want to test this, there's a very simple way to do it. Depending on how dense a wireless environment you live in. If you live in an urban environment, it's very difficult to get completely away from this. But if you go to a park, a large park, or get out of the urban environment, or even go to the ocean, and you lay down on the ground, what happens is that when you connect with the ground is benign, if it doesn't have, if it hasn't picked up a lot of these magnetic fields, you will feel better after a while. And it isn't just the psychological effect of taking a break and laying down and breathing, although certainly that's a good strategy for reducing anxiety. The truth is, this is a real effect. When people come to our house, our property, they often stop after a few minutes and say, oh my goodness, it's so quiet here. Well, it's relatively quiet. But that isn't why it's quiet for them. They also say things like, wow, I feel like I'm camping. The reason they feel that way is that we do not use wireless devices. And I'm not saying, oh, bully for us. I'm just saying, although we use a lot of technology in our office and various things, we don't use any wireless. We live in a community where we chased an antenna out of the community. There's no antenna here, or no tower, I should say. There's no tower here. And we're kind of in a position physically, so we're not surrounded by wireless routers, you know, wireless internet. So it does feel like you're camping at our house, and that's why. But that's what the feeling is. One person said that she went to her parents' house in Alaska, and they have a off-grid solar system, and she walked into the house, and she said it felt like, whew, you know, like everything just got quiet. So with this proliferation of these and the rollouts, and they're rolling out more and more, they're talking about now putting WiMAX broadband on the smart meter stuff, and the meters put radio frequency on your electrical lines because the electrical lines pick up the wireless radiation, the microwave, the RF, and it works like an antenna. The incidence of anxiety is increasing. It's very marked. Now, I'm going to stop talking about this, but I want to let you know that on our website, there are two videos that you might want to watch if you're dubious. One in particular is public comments at the California Public Utilities Commission from doctors and various psychotherapists who are treating people with electrohypersensitivity syndrome. And they are begging the CPUC to take seriously a petition for modification that was submitted by the EMF Safety Network at emfsafetynetwork.org. I urge you to watch at least the beginning of it because you will be impressed by the numbers of people. And in addition, there are some people who get up and talk about the fact that they were perfectly healthy people and now they're homeless because they have so many symptoms. So I'm telling you this because I want you to have something to watch. There's also a video of Jeff and I doing a presentation with some cartoons thrown in that we did in West Marin. So those will be up on our website, yourownhealthandfitness.org. Now, a few other things to keep in mind when you're looking at anxiety symptoms. Let me just say, this is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman, and I'm doing a show on anxiety. The symptoms of chemical sensitivities and electrosensitivities are very similar, and they're concomitant. In other words, people who have sensitivity to chemicals will be more vulnerable. So one of the things that so-called experts have been complaining about is that the people who are sensitive to this form of radiation, this non-ionizing radiation, this wireless stuff, are already sick. Well, they are more quickly sensitive to things that are making everybody sick. It would be more correct to say. And I should say also that the percentage of people in the population is growing incredibly. I think it's up to over 35% of the population now. But they're concomitant symptoms. So if you are sensitive to perfumes, if you feel sort of yuck when you're around synthetic perfumes and stuff, you're likely to be more sensitive to the electromagnetic stuff. Well, the difference might be that with chemicals, you might have a more profound metallic taste in your mouth, and you may also have more gastrointestinal symptoms. But other than that, the symptoms are pretty close. So, now, what is anxiety? Anxiety is a profound, chronic fight-or-flight stress response. And as I said, it's likely that this is a cumulative response that's been building. So whatever exposure you've had, and it could be, you know, chemical exposures, could be just trauma and stress in your life, or it could be the radio frequency stuff. It takes a while for it to build up, and once it does, you're in the midst of a very bad chronic stress response. And as I said, if you're unfortunate enough to have been raised in a very, very severe, difficult situation, then it's kind of built in. So along with needing to recover and needing support for recovery, you also need to think about your blood sugars, which will go up. Your blood sugars go up because that's a fight or flight response. They go up to get you out of a scary situation or to be able to fight. So one thing that will actually help with anxiety is to examine what it is you're eating and to notice whether you're now so hypoglycemic, in other words, you're having very high insulin levels from eating a lot of starch and sugar to medicate yourself, and then you're plunging when the insulin comes in, and you're having these troughs where you feel shaky and you don't feel well unless you eat something. Well, what are you eating? The correct answer, or the answer that will give you the most support, is if you're eating protein and fat and very, very nutrient-dense vegetables. When I say fats, I'm talking about unprocessed, undamaged fats. And I will tell you that, along with being your body's preferred fuel for energy, even though it will readjust itself around a high starch, high sugar diet to be dependent on that, if you give it a chance, if you give your mitochondria a chance, they will much prefer to burn fat. And this will oddly also keep you your weight down up to a point. Obviously, if you eat nothing but fat in huge, you know, enormous amounts that are kind of beyond what you really feel sated by, you could have your weight go up. But mostly what happens is people discover over time that their body changes the metabolism. So what I mean by unprocessed fats is they're real fats, and if they're vegetable oils, they're extracted without any solvents, and they're cold pressed and organic. And that you eat plenty of also saturated fats, which are very stable when they're cooked, but that they are natural, not damaged, not processed, not preserved fats. They also help mood. Although sugar can blunt a stress response for a brief period of time, ultimately making the stress response worse because you crash, fat actually does improve mood. Fat will help you to make the kinds of It helps to fuel the pharmacology in your brain that makes chemicals in your brain that make you feel better. So over time, shifting to a protein, vegetable, and higher fat diet will decrease your anxiety reaction. So don't reach for a sugary food. Reach for some protein or some fat. And that's going to depend on whether or not you have food allergies, what it is that you reach for. Now, there are lots of vitamin deficiencies that can increase anxiety as well, and that's why eating nutriently dense, not eating processed foods, is going to help. And I would say that people say, well, I'm under stress, and I'm stressed out, and I'm anxious, and I don't have time to cook. But you don't always have to cook. I mean, a handful of nuts, if you tolerate dairy, some cheese. Cooking this way, it doesn't take much time. Boiling some eggs, having them in the fridge. There are a variety of foods that don't take any time that can be handled as snacks. But the other thing to keep in mind when you're thinking about vitamin deficiencies is the fact that drugs, and this is particularly true along with others of psychiatric meds, decrease the production and pathways for the nutrients that actually naturally are necessary to prevent you from having psychiatric symptoms like anxiety. So anti-anxiety medications will block the nutrients that protect you from having anxiety. So the drugs do some damage that way, along with having these odd side effects, some of which are anxiety. So some of the deficiencies that increase anxiety, one of them is vitamin D, which is interesting. People don't sit in the sun anymore. They're really afraid of the sun. They're using very strong sunscreens, which could be causing some anxiety, too, because of the chemicals. So vitamin D is very low in people now. There's been more and more literature coming out over the years. It's been helpful to see that. Vitamin D3 is the natural form of D. It turns out that if you're a really, 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 really serious vegan and you won't take vitamin D3 because it's made either from lanolin or from fish oils, that if you take D2, which is the synthetic form, it will help. The problem is that D2 does become toxic if you take non-physiologic doses. I mean, if you kind of, instead of 4,000, you take 40,000, you know, and then after 2 weeks you'll have this weird reaction. But when you decrease the vitamin that's causing the problem, just stop it for a while till it changes, it will rebalance. It doesn't kill you the way drugs do. Balanced, so vitamin D, at least 4,000, unless you're sitting in the sun from about 12 to 2, the amount of time in the sun will vary depending on how dark your skin is. So if you're a light European person, you need maybe 15 minutes in the sun, and then it will increase to 20 minutes to half an hour depending on the density of melanin in your skin, how dark your skin is. The sun also is a mood increases mood. It stimulates thyroid. So getting a little sun on your skin and getting some sun helps with mood. If you're getting every single day during the sunny time of the year, if you're out between 12 and 2, the high time, for 15 minutes to half an hour, you probably could get by with 1,000 to 2,000 units IUs of vitamin D. But if you're not, as most of us are not, or you get out at other times, then do take 4,000 IUs of vitamin D. Taking balanced minerals is very important. Calcium and magnesium both have a calming effect, although calcium, as I've mentioned on the show before, also keep in mind that you only take, again, with vitamins you can sort of make a mistake. With minerals you want to be more careful about overdosing. And calcium should be kept within 1,200 to 1,500 milligrams per day, including what you're eating. You don't have to count what's in your vegetables or whatever, but if you're doing dairy, you might want to consider that. It has more calcium than magnesium dairy. Calcium tends to constrict your arteries and your veins, so it can contribute, if it's unopposed by magnesium, to hypertension, which people with anxiety suffer from. Hypertension. It's an anxiety reaction. Or it's hyperarousal, you know, we're living in this incredibly buzzy world. Magnesium, on the other hand, opens the arterial walls, opens the it's a vasodilator, and it is a natural calcium channel blocker. So those of you who are taking calcium channel blockers would do well to switch to magnesium. It has a calming effect. You can even take somebody who's having an anxiety reaction, and if you can get them to get into a nice warm tub of water, and you put Epsom salts in the water, the magnesium will go in right through their skin and cause them to feel much better very quickly. So calcium and magnesium, and sometimes you need extra magnesium. Magnesium, again, is one of those vitamins that's to bowel tolerance. So some people need more than others. If you take more than you need, you get gassy and you get loose bowels. Another mineral that's very important with anxiety, and which seems to be low in people when they study them who have anxiety, is selenium. And selenium is a very interesting mineral because it functions like an antioxidant. It's very interesting. But another reason that no one said in the studies, but would make sense to me, that selenium would be helpful with anxiety, is that it affects the conversion of T4, which is the thyroid hormone that your thyroid makes first, thyroid being metabolism and mood. T4 is the hormone your thyroid makes first, and then your body has to convert T4 to T3. T3 is an active form of thyroid, and without enough T3, you get very depressed. So people with anxiety reactions sometimes aren't getting a multivitamin, aren't getting sufficient amounts of selenium, and aren't converting T4 to T3 and are having symptoms there. So selenium is important as well. Folic acid, and all of the B vitamins are terribly important in a stress response, but many people who have anxiety reactions and obsessive reactions and looping thoughts and obsessions are low in folate and sometimes B12. And are not, you know, as I've talked about before, methylating properly. So their detoxification pathways aren't working well. So folic acid, all the B vitamins, and vitamin C. In fact, if you go to a health food store and you look around, you'll find B complex with C, and they'll call it a stress vitamin. And that's why. Now, along with vitamin C, which is an antioxidant, all the other antioxidants are terribly important as well, and especially the fat-soluble ones like vitamin A and vitamin E, which always want to be taken with other vitamins. So taking a multivitamin, unless you have some specific health problem that prevents you from taking something like iodine or copper or whatever, I often suggest an iron-free multi, because iron in multivitamins tends to be a form of iron that is a metal and gets literally rusty. You know, we're breathing beings, so we are exposing the nutrients and the molecules in our body to oxidation, and the antioxidants are there to counter that effect. Iron is very rusty and very oxidative, and isn't the right iron for us. The right iron for us, unfortunately, for people who don't like to eat animals, is from blood. So red meat is the form of iron. But short of that, there are some herbs you can take if your iron is low. But it's not good to take it in the vitamins unless they're providing it in a really safe form. We need to take a brief break. This is Lena Berman, Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm doing a solo show today about anxiety, and I will be right back after this, and we'll finish up with the show. So stay with us. Welcome back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman. I'm doing a solo show today on anxiety. There's information about Your Own Health and Fitness, our guests, our practice, a free stream of this week's show, our archive, CD copies, our book, and lots more at yourownhealthandfitness.org. Information number is 707-874-2772 and email admin at yourownhealthandfitness.org with everything spelled out. You can visit us on Facebook, either at Your Own Health and Fitness or at Too Much Medicine, Not Enough Health, which is the book. And you will find a lot of the information that I use in the show. Some of it will be in the book as well. So I'm discussing anxiety, and I've just talked about some of the deficiencies and reminding you again that when you're using drugs, they create deficiencies that are often the deficiencies that cause the problem which you're taking the drug for, if you can grok that. But there are specific nutrient treatments that work well with anxiety and obsessiveness. One of them, which goes way back to Abraham Hoffer, you know, when people tell me, well, can't we get it all from food? And then we go back to the pioneers, the vitamin pioneers. Abraham Hoffer is one of those vitamin pioneers who started treating people who actually had had psychotic episodes, like severe psychiatric symptoms, with niacin, B3. And he was able to reverse schizophrenia and that sort of stuff. Now, people with anxiety are usually not that severe, but they can have a deficiency of niacin. So that's why if you take a vitamin B complex several times a day, like a B50 two times a day, or if you just have a multivitamin that has enough in it, enough of a B vitamin. Some of the multivitamins have only, you know, about, you know, the 25 milligrams or something. So you might want to add, a B complex to a multivitamin if it's really low in the B vitamins like that. So niacin will be in there is what I'm trying to say, and you may get enough of it just by taking a multivitamin. Niacin and niacinamide both test very well in terms of reducing anxiety reactions, but both of these vitamins can be irritating to the gut if you take too much. And everybody needs a very individual dose. People are extremely different, and you sometimes have to experiment a bit with it. But I would say that the first step is you're suffering from anxiety. You're not taking a multivitamin. That would be like number one, and then taking extra vitamin C throughout the day. And then you can start moving up on the other things slowly to see what helps. Now, it turns out, talking about B vitamins, there is some kind of relationship between niacin and B6. And so if you take really high doses of niacin, sometimes you have to make sure you're getting enough B6, right? And here's how it works. B6 helps with the conversion of tryptophan to niacin. So you've all heard that tryptophan or 5-HTP tryptophan helps with increasing serotonin levels, although who knows exactly how this is all working, because there are so many receptors, so many places for so many different things, including serotonin. We don't know for sure that it's that simple, but Tryptophan seems to help with anxiety. And here may be the mechanism that makes it work, since there is this nice handshake between the B vitamin, specifically B6, and turning tryptophan, which you eat in your food if you're eating protein, animal protein, I should say, or at the very least eggs and dairy, turns it into niacin. So there's this round robin between tryptophan and niacin, and they both are very helpful for anxiety reactions. Now, other things that are helpful for supporting somebody who's having a lot of anxiety is you got to think that your adrenal cortex is working double time, because you're in a fight or flight state, so you're likely having high cortisol levels or very low cortisol levels, and so you want to look to your adrenal cortex to see how you can support that. Now this is also to say that getting the anxiety level down, and we're going to talk about that as well, is important too. But in the meantime, let's support the body. So another B vitamin is B5, pantothenic acid, is very important for adrenal health. And when you take the B vitamins, it would be useful if you bought B vitamins and multivitamins that are hypoallergenic. And I don't buy into the food-based vitamin stuff. I see people react very well to it. Now, people are different, so somebody's going to say, no, it's not me, to pharmaceutical-grade vitamins. And you could go on a tear about who's creating them and how clean they are and where they're being made. So there are reputable vitamin companies that test things and check their sources, and they're getting a lot of their stuff from, you know, they're making sure everything's clean. But for people who have food sensitivities, and sensitive, anxious people very often do, sometimes the food-based vitamins have extra things added to them. The other thing is that their dosages, if they're really food-based, their doses of vitamins are going to be extremely low unless they're not really food-based. And you have to ask yourself, when you're doing something food-based, how much processing are you doing to the food to extract the vitamins out, and how much is it actually still food after that? So B vitamins should be yeast-free. They should be made without yeast, selenium as well. Yeast-free hypoallergenic vitamins usually are tolerated better. B12 is an energy vitamin. All B vitamins are energy vitamins that restore and replace depletion, and they help with detoxification, as do sulfur-containing amino acids. They kind of run the cascade that produces glutathione, which is how your body gets rid of the chemicals and the xenoestrogens and things that cause a lot of anxiety reactions, like the metals and the solvents. Solvent exposure is terrible for anxiety. I can attest personally to that. So sulfur-containing amino acids are tricky for people who are vegans because they're not in eggs and dairy. They're in animal protein. So if you're absolutely ferociously needing to be a vegan, and I really understand the moral, emotional feeling about that, then taking N-acetylated cysteine, or NAC, would be a beneficial thing to add, along with the B12 and possibly some methionine, which is one of the other main. So cysteine and methionine are the main sulfur-containing aminos. You can take them in caps. They're not made from animal sources, but they should be included in a vegan diet if you must go there. But also make sure you're eating plenty of good fats, olive oil and palm oil and coconut oil and things like that. Make sure you're getting enough fat. The other amino acids, as long as I'm on that tear, for vegans would be carnitine, which is in red meat and is responsible for protecting your energy cells and your brain. And you don't get it unless you eat red meat, so best to take it in a capsule in a form that doesn't come from an animal, so that you still get the benefit of that nutrient. Very important. Energy repletion, and it works synergistically with coenzyme Q10, so you're driving your energy cells. And if you're anxious all the time, they need some help. The other antioxidant that drives your detox works very well to make glutathione. Instead of trying to take glutathione, you can make glutathione, which seems to be a better way, is alpha-lipoic acid, alpha-lipoic, L-I-P-O-I-C, acid. Now, there is a school of thought that you can calm all of this down using amino acids, and the explanation is that amino acids are neurotransmitters. Neurotransmitters are really kind of anything that communicates with your cells. So beyond amino acids, there is just nutrient density. And if your nutrient density is insufficient to drive the type of stress response that you're experiencing, you will become more and more depleted and more anxious. And then it's sort of you don't know which thing came first, chicken or egg. You know, did you get exposed and you're anxious, or are you? So it's very important to remember that it's not just amino acids. And if you do eat substantial, you know, real, honest-to-God protein at every meal, you should be getting a fair amount of amino acids, but it's often a good idea to supplement. So as with the carnitine, or with the vegans, the NAC and the methionine, some of the calming amino acids, along with tryptophan, which obviously you want to find a good source. I don't like to give out vitamin company names on the air because it's sort of like an advertisement, but I will say that some companies are more reputable at testing their products than others. They aren't always the most expensive ones, though. There are some inexpensive lines that do a good job. But tryptophan is, these amino acids are better. You have to be careful about the source because there's been tampering with tryptophan. There's been no problem for a long time recently, but tryptophan is quite effective at reducing anxiety. It's very good to take before bed, along with another calming amino acid, which is GABA, G-A-B-A. GABA, you have receptors in your brain for these amino acids, because technically if you're eating well, you've got the raw material to run this pharmacology in your brain. But you can add to it, and tryptophan and GABA are both very good, and I find for most people, if you take 1,000 of each before bed, that can sometimes cool you out enough to sleep. It varies, though. Some people, especially if you've been taking a lot of medications, your pharmacology is probably sluggish and not working anymore because it's been getting stuff from the outside. So why should it make it on the inside? It tends to, you know, there's that whole up and down regulation thing with your receptors. They downregulate when there's not a lot of stuff around. You know, if you're from a really depressive family or something, and you're, you know, the sort of things that increase well-being, like the painkiller endorphin and all these other happy chemicals that we make, you will be down-regulated. So there's not much going around. Your receptors kind of say, yeah, we'll just make the best of what we've got. If you start taking in stuff from outside, like medications or drugs or lots of sugar or something like that, your cells will upregulate, and then pretty soon they don't respond anymore to these things. So there's a whole kind of balancing act, but certainly adding in the raw materials to make these happy chemicals is kind of going to control that pump between up and down regulation. Tryptophan, GABA, and another one is taurine. T-A-U-R-I-N-E. T-A-U-R-I-N-E. Taurine is calming, can be taken through the day. Tryptophan and GABA, you should be careful about your doses if you take them during the day because they're pretty strong. If you're going to do it to go to sleep, you can take 1,000. If you're going to try to take it during the day, you might be better off with 100. Depends on how you're feeling, how anxious you are. Okay, so let's talk about some underlying causes. I talked about your medicine chest, and I talked about the wireless internet that you're using, which could be wired really easily, and you'd be doing the birds and bees around you in the environment a favor, since it kind of radiates around 350 feet, and probably neighbors who are sensitive might be grateful too. The other things that can cause problems is clearly, I have this in a different order, but it's always best to look at the possibility that you're suffering from some kind of endocrine disruption. And the top of the list, along with sex hormone imbalances, is going to be thyroid. Now, obviously, if people under stress develop autoimmune problems, especially if it sort of runs in the family, they will present under stress. So people with anxiety, we don't know whether it's the anxiety driving it, or are you having anxiety because you now have an autoimmune problem. But autoimmune thyroid causes enormous anxiety and depression and swinging stuff and all that. It could be, sometimes you can have a transient hyper thyroid reaction occur, or you can really have honest-to-God Graves, which is a specific antibody that can be tested that's different from the autoimmune thyroid antibody. It's good to know which one you're dealing with. Also, just low thyroid will make people feel crummy, but having, obviously, a thyroid swing into a hyperthyroid state, it's best to know what the cause is, which antibody system you're dealing with, and you're dealing with it because it's an enormous it'll drive enormous amounts of anxiety. Additionally, as far as endocrine disruptions, is unopposed estrogen in both genders, and yes, both genders have estrogen. So, in women, not having enough progesterone on board, or having picked up too much estrogen from either the environment or just who you are. Not having sufficient progesterone, which is calming and sedative, is going to cause a lot of anxiety. It's very easy to get anxious just by going into perimenopause and then menopause, where you drop your progesterone production drops and your estrogen's still going. In men, having too much estrogen, picking up weight over the years, drinking alcohol drives up men's estrogen levels, drives up testosterone in women, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but it's terrible for the liver, so that means you're not clearing any of your hormones. But unopposed estrogen in men opposes their testosterone. Their testosterone drives down, and they feel much more anxious and irritable. Another thing, I should ID the show. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman. Jeff Fawcett is sitting by, and this is a show on anxiety. Food allergies. So along with what are you eating enough protein, are you getting enough fat, are you driving yourself through the day by eating all the sugar and having lots of smoothies, which are real honest-to-God fruit, but you're not chewing the fruit and you're eating too many things, so you're increasing the sugar. So all the stuff you do to make yourself feel better short-term might be hijacking you, but along with that, people develop food sensitivities and allergies. Food sensitivities and allergies, my feeling is it doesn't matter which it is, whether it's a classic allergy or whether you're just become sensitive because you've been pounding on a food too much. And one of the ones that seems to cause the most problem with anxiety is a allergy to grains or a sensitivity to grains. And I'm sorry to say all grains. So it's the protein in the grains that tend to do it. So if you're going to have an anxiety reaction from grains, it's going to be all the grains, including rice. And it's best to eliminate them for a while. In fact, it's best to eliminate, it's that pre-agricultural diet that I talk about all the time. So you might want to try for a period of time eliminating all the grains and maybe eliminating even milk and dairy and corn and see what happens if you get rid of some of the provocative foods, see if some of the anxiety reactions get reduced. We've got a section, of course, in the book that talks about the hunter-gatherer diet, the pre-agrarian diet. We've talked about it endlessly on the show, but just getting rid of those foods and seeing. Some people don't even realize. Some people test for celiacs, and it's not celiacs, but they're still sensitive. All the other allergies, too, can be causing an enormous amount of anxiety. It can, not the least of which is just feeling really muzzy and lots of brain fog. But also watch allergy medications and also natural treatments that have adrenaline or other stimulating herbs or amino acids that are excitatory, like glutamic acid is an excitatory, not the same as glutamine, or phenylalanine, which is spelled phenylalanine. Are both excitatory and get slipped into some formulas. Got to watch that, too. So you could be taking something that's making you feel worse. Now, I don't think I have to say this, but I'm going to remind you that meditation is really helpful if it doesn't increase anxiety. Of course, when people are anxious, sometimes when they try to sit down and be quiet, they feel more anxious. So sitting with others can really help, or meditating on a color that you like, just taking a piece of paper with a color on it and just looking at the color. You don't have to be formal about it, but taking that kind of break where your mind gets a little break. And then exercise changes everything. It changes your whole metabolism and everything. Changes your mood. If you feel really terrible and you just go around the block, sometimes it will help. It really sometimes will help. And it's, you know, it's one of those things that you can do first before you do anything else, especially if you feel like you're going to have an argument with somebody, walk around the block. Another thing that you can try if things are really amped up is you can try taking some homeopathic histamine, which is called histanum. It's H-I-S-T-A-M-I-N-U-M. So it's histaminum. I don't speak Latin. Hardly speak English. H-I-S-T-A-M-I-N-U-M. I would try like a 30C, and these are pellets. If you get them in pellets, they're pellets that have they're lactose pellets, and the remedy is coating the pellet. So if you're lactose sensitive and you know that, no milk sensitive, put the pellet in your mouth, leave it there for 10 or 15 seconds and spit it out. Otherwise, you can just leave it under your tongue. You only take these when you need them. You don't take them regularly unless you need them, unless the symptoms come back. But histamine, if you're having a bizarre reaction, you take some histamine and it backs off, you may be dealing with an allergic reaction, and that gives you a clue to what might be going on. Then you can go on a witch hunt for what you're reacting to. The other homeopathic remedy that might be a good diagnostic for you is thyroidinum. Thyroidinum. Thyroid with I-N-U-M at the end. Thyroidinum. Another 30C. So if you are bouncing off the walls and feeling insane and you take this homeopathic dose once of thyroid and you cool out, then again you might have a clue that your thyroid is on track somewhere. Let's see, do I want other homeopathics for anxiety? The classic fear remedy in homeopathics is aconitum, A-C-O-N-I-T-U-M. That's for fear. Arsenicum, which is arsenic, but it's homeopathic. Arsenicum albin is for anxiety and cold, and sometimes your bowels are a little loose, so you're cold and anxious. That's arsenicum albin. Coffea cruda, which looks like coffee cruda, is for anxiety with particularly with obsessive thoughts. And Ignatia, I think I'm saying that right. Ignatia, I-G-N-A-T-I-A, Ignatia Imara, is for panic attacks, panic and restlessness. It's also good for insomnia. It's good for grief. It's very good for grief. Passiflora, P-A-S-S-I-F-L-O-R-A. Passiflora is for nervousness and insomnia. Now, you can start with just a 6. The lower the number, the less diluted it is, and the more of the substance you're getting, although it's still a really small amount. You could start, because it's 6C means it's 100 times, so it's 600 times diluted. You can start with a 6C twice a day and see how that goes, but don't take it if you don't need it. And 30C is a little stronger. The more dilute, the stronger, but sometimes it's a good diagnostic. There are various herbs that work too, but their actions are very, very individual. And you really need to look at your whole terrain when you're doing, it's true with homeopathy too, if you're going to do any long-term treatment with homeopathy, but with herbs, the ones that are used the most are kava kava and valerian. There are others, but I've noticed that even, and also with valerian, some people can take them and some people have a really strange reaction. So you have to kind of start very low dose and see how you're responding. Now, there are also, I think, the flower essences are the most remarkable and supportive thing you can do when you're experiencing anxiety. They're remarkable. And I've interviewed and had on the air the author of Healing Bouquet, which is a phenomenal book on the flower essences, and it's Vinton McCabe, M-C-C-A-B-E, the The flower essences to help to start with when you're really in an acute state is Rescue Remedy. It's always the first one to go to, and it can be taken constantly throughout the day, unlike homeopathy and herbs and other things. This can just, you can just pound on yourself with this stuff. I mean, keeping in mind that there's some alcohol in it. But there are also creams for Rescue Remedy. But you just mix it in some water and drink it during the day, and it should help a lot. Specific remedies for anxiety is Mimulus, M-U-M-U-L-U-S, Mimulus, if you know what's frightening you and making you scared. Aspen, if you don't know. So if you don't know why you're anxious, Aspen. If you know, Mimulus. Cherry plum, when you're anxious and you feel like you have no control over what's happening to you, like everything's out of control. Rock rose is for irrational terror and panic and nightmares. These work really, really well. And the book is really wonderful. And you can mix flower essences in a bottle. And you can figure out by reading which ones are best for you and mix them together and put them in a bottle. And take them, really, lots during the day. So, along with reducing exposures to chemicals and artificial scents and pesticides and wireless and drugs and examining feelings with help, doing what you can do to feel less helpless, engaging with others, doing work to help solve some of the problems in the world, or engage with others either in therapy or in groups. If possible, do not isolate yourself. Animals are enormously helpful with anxiety. There's some aromatherapy scents that work very well for anxiety. There's a whole bunch of them. A few of them are lavender. Gosh, do you pronounce this lang lang when there's a Y in front? Lang lang. Bergamot, jasmine, lemon, neroli, sandalwood, clary sage, orange. All of those are good for reducing, you know, you sprinkle some lavender onto a handkerchief and carry it with you in situations that are crazy making. The other thing to remember, now I'm a great believer in therapy. I really, really, really believe in therapy. Some people have to do peer counseling because money is tight, but there are increasingly venues for people with financial situations to find therapeutic help. But there's another thing that is very important, along with not feeling completely helpless, which is the most corrosive form of stress and causes lots of anxiety, is to, and this is something I'm still working on, okay? But this is a big one, is to say to yourself when you're anxious, that, you know, and you think you kind of have these thoughts rushing through your head, you can try saying to yourself, this, because this feeling is there or this thought is there, this doesn't mean that. That just because this seems true right now, it doesn't mean that this other thing is going to happen. There's nothing inevitable. You don't actually know what's going to happen. So this doesn't mean that is a good thing to keep in mind when you're bouncing off the walls, along with taking lots of flower essences and smelling lots of lavender and laying on the ground in a park. You know, obviously implicit in this is to find a way to opt out. Just like we're trying to opt out of the smart meters, you know, finding a way to opt out of the buzziness and the increase and the craziness, that's a really good diagnostic. You don't need to go to an expensive doctor and have them run tests until you've done some of this stuff yourself, because you may find that you will know exactly what the problem is. I want to thank you all for listening. I'm Lena Berman. There's information about your own health and fitness, our guests, our practice, a free stream of this week's show, our archive, CD copies, and lots more at yourownhealthandfitness.org. Our information number, 707-874-2772, and email at admin@yourownhealthandfitness.org, all spelled out. Visit us on Facebook, Your Own Health and Fitness, or Too Much Medicine, Not Enough Health. Your Own Health and Fitness is produced by Lena Berman and Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett. Remember, being informed not only protects your health, it protects your freedom.